I wanted to give a shout out to a program announcement. So Cows listeners, you can tune in to Dig Music Experience every second and fourth Monday of the month from 3 to 5 p.m. with your host, former record store owner Mike Rumbanez. You'll hear new releases blended with a deep catalog of many genres, including alternative indie rock, R&B, blues, Americana, reggae, tasty rock and roll jams, and some interesting surprises along the way. Mike's show includes extraordinary vocalists, unique songwriters, and is reflective, hard-hitting, dreamy, groovy, funky, psychedelic, and rockin' no limits. Join Mike for the Dig Music Experience every second and fourth Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific on Cows, streaming at cowsfm.com. Free speech, no bull, community radio. Well, that's it for that. So let's get started with Remembering Ourselves. I just want to reintroduce the show. Remembering Ourselves is a way to look back at the music and practices of our past in order to ground ourselves as we navigate these times of transition and crisis, and hopefully deepen our connection to each other and the natural world as we find our path forward. I'll say again, my guest today is writer Kelly Gray. We've met through a mutual friend, the Honorable Mahaya Campbell, who was a guest on our show actually in the very early days of this year. And I've gotten to know Kelly a little bit, and she's amazing. The kind of informal thing I'll say is that I find she's got this like authentic connection to this place, you know, West County and the nature here. You'll hear more when we talk, but she's a poet and a writer, and you know, has of course just a deep way with words, especially on the page, that you know connects history and you know just like human experience in a way that I find really amazing. And she's also just an organizer of awesome things. Hopefully we'll talk about it later in the show, but I remember last year going to a few of these Books and Bards events that are like outdoor, literary, just like all the things that I love happening. So welcome to the show, Kelly.
Thank you so much for having me. That was a very nice introduction.
Of course. No, I'm so excited that you're here. The first question I was going to ask was more like, what was it like to just like get that prompt or get that opportunity to be like, look back in your life and think about the music?
Yeah, well, it was a process. I'll start with that. It was definitely a process. I went through several different versions of responding to it in different ways. First, of course, I was deeply honored that you thought of me. So thank you so much for having me here.
Of course.
And then I decided it was probably a mistake and you had asked the wrong person. And there's a couple different reasons that came up. I thought that I was going to overthink it, which I did. I did overthink it. But I also was never one of these people that was like a really nerdy music person. That's not how I respond to music. And so I had some concerns, and you were really generous. And we actually talked about that in advance, which was great. And then I went through how do I answer such a question of the music that impacted you? Six songs like that feels really impossible. And so I'm a Virgo. I like to organize things. I like to write lists and charts. And so I thought, well, maybe if I analyze this, we'll get somewhere. And I ended up narrowing it down to love songs. And then I created a criteria for how to rate the love songs. You know, I had like 25. And as I was working through that criteria, I realized that somewhere it was faulty somewhere, and I didn't know where it was, but the songs that I thought were going to be my favorite, they weren't making the list. And I thought, this isn't right. And then I was like, just pick the songs that you think should be on the list. So that's what we're dealing with today. But they're not all love songs. I kind of branched out after that.
Well, that's so cool.
But yeah, it was fascinating. And then even today, as I was kind of researching some of the memories around the songs, I went into places that I hadn't thought about in a really long time, and it was a really nice gift to be given.
That's really cool. Yeah, I think we said when we spoke earlier, I was bringing this up, but I think many people respond differently to the idea of choosing music and songs. And I think for some people, it is the specific songs, you know, and for some people, it's just more like the genre or the kind of, you know, the broader category of music. But ultimately, because you have to actually choose songs, I found it very confronting when I did my own version of this. And it is, I think when my mom came on, or I had another person come on, Ryan Miller from Monterio, who's like, they're in their 70s, yes. And they were like, just have to say, choosing six songs to represent all my phases of life is just absurd. You know,
it is absurd. It's wonderfully absurd.
Yeah, and I at some point I want to bring on my kids, because I think of it as like kids would be impossible, but actually I talked to them about them. They're like, yeah, I can answer those questions.
They can.
Like they have like, you know, the stuff they listened to in their early days, and then they have they're like, you know, stuff when I you know, they can still answer those questions even though they're only like 6 and 9.
Yeah.
So everybody has like the way they relate to the different phases of their life, and I'm sure it evolves over time.
One of the things that I'll mention that I thought was really interesting when I came, like when it really came down to it and I had to narrow it down, I started to think about the songs that were gateways into other types of music that were opening me up to other places. And so that's a big component of the songs that I chose. I'll talk about that.
Okay,
talk
cool.
About the songs.
Yeah, because I think the other thing that we talked about earlier, which I wanted to bring up, was like, you know, everybody has different relationships to music itself, right? And I think in the spirit of this show, when I was first thinking about it, I think songs are a nice thing to choose. We can play them, we can hear them, but really it's about your connection to, you know, culture and meaning and in whatever forms they come in. And for some people that really is music and songs are the main thing. But for many people, it's not that, you know, it could be through, you know, books, or it could be through live experiences, or it could be through, you know, movies or TV shows. Like there's various forms of kind of culture that are meaningful. And I think for the sake of simplicity, you know, we're going with music and songs, but it doesn't have to be, you know, and especially these days where it's all over the map.
Yeah. To me, it really feels like memory. Like that's what I was connecting into with all of this.
I love it. Well, let me ask you about the beginning. Like, you know, can you share a little bit about your early life?
Yeah. So can I start by sharing the songs that
I picked please,
out?
Go for
okay,
it.
Great. So the first two songs representing my early life are Walking After Midnight by Patsy Cline, total classic, and I Gotta Get Drunk by George Jones and Willie Nelson. And I picked these songs because that's what my family listened to. They listened to country music, but we weren't the type of family where music was necessary. We didn't go to music shows. Nobody was talking to me about music. Like, it was a very private thing. But the one place that you couldn't escape being with the music with the family was in the car. And so when I was growing up, my mom lived in Los Angeles and my dad lived in Mammoth Lakes. And every other weekend, he would come to collect my brother and I and drive us to Mammoth for the weekend, for the long weekend. And so on these drives up the 395, right, we have like...
Wait, so say again, you're going from like...
We're going from Los Angeles to Mammoth Lakes.
Okay.
And so that's through, it's 395. It sits between Mount Whitney to the west and Death Valley.
Got it.
To the east. It is a visually
beautiful,
stunning area. And country music was the appropriate music to
totally
be listening to on those rides. And so my dad would put on George Jones and Willie Nelson, and me and my brother were in the back of the pickup truck with the shell with our sleeping bags. And this was before we had anything to distract ourselves with except books if we wanted to. But it was really just listening to my dad croon in the front seat.
And so he would sing along to the songs.
Oh, he's a terrible singer and he loves it. Loves it. Passionate, awful singer. He does not mind if I say that. I've also inherited that.
I love it.
And then for later on, that the I Gotta Get Drunk song really stayed with me because I found out later that my grandmother loved that song. And that's, I think, where my dad probably first heard it, was with his family.
That's so cool. So that song like goes back a few generations.
I think so. Yeah. My grandmother's a huge Willie Nelson, or was a huge Willie Nelson fan.
That guy, man, he's still kicking it, right? I mean, from what I can understand, he's still touring.
He's still touring. Yeah, he's absolutely.
He's in his 90s, right?
He's in his 90s. I had a, I'm going to slip in a Willie Nelson story if that's okay.
Do it.
So when I was 23, 24, I was living in the city and I was working for an organization that was doing fundraising for Greenpeace. And our job was to put on our Greenpeace jackets and go out into public streets and ask people, hey, do you have a minute for Greenpeace? And they would give us money. And so there was a show that was happening at Tower Records, if you remember Tower Records in the city, for anyone listening, it's not there anymore. But they would have these kind of small, intimate shows, and Willie Nelson was playing, and I was like, Willie Nelson totally supports Greenpeace. Like, this, we're going to go make tons of money, and then I'm going to bring some vinyl records that my friends have, and let's see if we can get him to sign them. That was the plan for the day. And in fact, the people waiting in line for the show were so supportive, we never got to get in line to meet Willie Nelson. And I had just this moment where I started crying at the end of my shift because I didn't get to do the thing I wanted to do. And this tall, huge guy that clearly worked for Willie Nelson, he had all, you know, the Willie Nelson bandana and the Willie Nelson leather jacket and the boots and the socks that said Willie Nelson, like everything Willie Nelson. He saw me and he saw that I was crying and he said, what's going on? Who made you cry? And I said, well, they shut the door. They're not letting me in, but I've been working for Greenpeace and I just wanted to see if I could meet Willie Nelson. And he's like, just follow me. So he brings me in.
Wow.
And I wait behind two other people. You know, I'm now at the back of the line that's inside. And when I got up to Willie Nelson, what I remember about it was that he was quite old at that time. He looked frail to me. His braids were really beautifully done. But I was like, yeah, he's always been old in my mind.
Wow.
You know, and so I had him sign a book and a record. And he said, but what am I signing for you? And I had not brought anything for me.
You were so focused on the cause.
I was so focused on the cause. Yes, that's what it was. And I said, well, Willie Nelson, would you sign my heart? And he said, I wouldn't mind at all. And
wow.
So I pulled my dress to the side and he signed where my heart was.
Wow.
And I was so excited. And this was before we had, you know, I didn't own a camera. I couldn't take a picture of it or anything like that. It was gone by the next day.
That's such a cool story.
Really lovely.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that. Well, if you're just joining, this is Remembering Ourselves. I'm Colin Mutchler. I'm here with Kelly Gray, who's based in Camp Meeker, a writer and community builder. I don't know if she would say that. I just said that because
that's
of the
fine.
Books and Barnes. But each show we ask the guests to bring two songs that represent their early life, kind of the music that came before they chose their own music, two songs that were more like their coming of age when they first started to get into music themselves, and then two that more from now. And so we'll play the two songs that Kelly brought with her to represent the early life. The first one is, again, Walking After Midnight by Patsy Cline.
I go out walking after midnight, out in the moonlight, just like we used to do. I'm always walking after midnight.
Walking After Midnight, Patsy Cline. And the next one is, great name, I Gotta Get Drunk by George Jones and Willie Nelson.
Well, I gotta get drunk and I sure do dread it, cause I know just what I'm gonna do. Start spending my money, call everybody honey, and wind up singing the blues. I'll spend my whole paycheck on some old wreck, and brother, I can name you a few. Well, I gotta get drunk and I sure do dread it, cause I know just what I'm gonna do.
Well, I gotta get drunk, Lord, I can't stay sober. There's a lot of good people in town. They love to hear me see me spend my dollars, I wouldn't think of letting them down. Well, there's a lot of good doctors keep telling me, George, you better start slowing it down.
But there's more old drunks than they are old doctors, so I guess we better have another round.
That's I Gotta Get Drunk with Willie Nelson and George Jones, a classic, along with Patsy Cline, who sadly passed when she was very young in an airplane accident. But thanks for sharing those two songs representing your early life.
Yeah, my pleasure. That was fun.
So, yeah, can you maybe tell me about a little bit more about that time, you know, like a little bit later once you started getting into music for yourself?
Yeah, I think... You know, growing up in the 80s, I felt like a lot of music was handed to me. Prince, Madonna, Bowie, and although they are all great musicians, and I'm sure that, you know, some of those songs are sentimental to me, I didn't feel like they were mine. And I also feel like I was a little bit of a late bloomer, partially because the community that I was growing up in was like, super into hip hop and rap. It was a small town, West Marin, really into hip hop and rap. And I do love hip hop and rap, and I was surprised that that did not make my list. But again, that was more just what was happening around me as my peers right. were doing it. It wasn't like I felt like, oh, this is really resonating with me. And so that didn't happen for me until I was a freshman in high school, and I was away for the summer at a writing program and met this other writer who had kind of taken me under his wing. And I was this kind of like awkward kid at this program where everyone seemed really, really cool. And I didn't know left from right. And he liked my work and I liked his work. And that's all we talked about. And that was really exciting. His name was Zane. Like, just to, if you can picture how cool someone has to be.
Zane. I've met a few Zanes in my life, but I always thought that name was really cool too.
Anything with a Z, right? Yeah.
Totally.
And so he... The first thing that he shared with me was Harold and Maude, which still stays with me to
it's a
major influence.
Whoever introduces you to Harold and Maude, that's a cool person.
Yeah. He took me to see it, and it was amazing, and I felt changed in that moment, and that I had found my people. I didn't know where they were, but I knew that they were watching that too. And then he said, "Let me play this album for you," and it was on. You know, he put the headphones over my ears, and it was the Violent Femmes.
Wow.
And what I loved about them was that they were angry and they were making being angry fun. And that was really exciting for me. I was used to listening to angry music, but it never felt fun in the way they did. And their political consciousness, I think, reflected the beginning of my political consciousness at that time. And the song that I picked out today also brings in some of the kind of gender-bending queer way that they were forming without being like super heavy-handed about it. It was just kind of like who they were. It was just built into the music, and I fell in love with them.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, I was thinking back to my own relationship to that, to the Violent Femmes, because I think probably that the album that one was on was maybe before the one that I was exposed to. I forget what it's called. Like, what was it called? Like, Take It Up, or what was the one that was the one that had a lot of Added Up? Was it Added Up? That was the one that I was exposed to. I think it was like and there was that famous one, Blister in the Sun,
yes.
which like I like was like, you know, it was like I sang it and then I understood what it meant. It was even more fun. It was even more fun to, but that resonates with me, that what you said about how there's like something to the way their voice is that's like not traditional, you know,
it's folky, it's bluesgrassy, it's country, it's rock. I mean, they really created a sound that was their own, but it felt like it came from the lineage of music that I was already listening to,
right.
just very much set in like 80s, 90s sensibilities.
Right, that's cool. Yeah, and I was curious was it your brother that was the one that was your brother older than you, or were you younger or older?
I'm older than my brother.
Okay. Yeah, because I think that from when I've been talking to people about this, there's so much in like the who brings you the music. initially and how they bring it.
Yeah.
And you were saying, oh, that resonates with me, what you said about like, there was a lot of music around in like the scene you were in West Marin at that time. But it wasn't really that you were like independently being like, this, I'm discovering this for myself, because it was like in the air so much that you almost were like craving some kind of like place to go that's like somewhere different.
Yeah. Like I remember there were girls that, you know, we've thought of as like the popular girls. And so their music circulated. And I mm-hmm. think when I think about it, actually, all those girls had older siblings, and that's where it was coming from.
Interesting.
Right. But I didn't have an older sibling, and I didn't have my family, just for whatever reason, wasn't sharing music with me in that same way. So when I started to meet people outside of where I lived that were like, this is what we're listening to, that had a big impact.
And that's so cool that you got to be part of whatever that program was, that you found that person that was like both like you liked each other in terms of your work, and then for them to be able to offer you an introduction to music. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What was it? Do you remember what the program was? Was it just like a writer program?
I was a CalArts scholar. And so I had gone down to the Southern California campus, the CalArts campus, and I was there for a month. And it had been very much something that my family pressured me into doing. I didn't think that anyone would want to read my sorrowful, sad, sometimes really inappropriate poetry. And it's very similar to what I still write these days. And in fact, the program, many of the students did not enjoy it. They had a really hard time with it, and it wasn't really welcomed. And Zane was someone who really advocated for me to continue doing what I was doing. And when I had my first poetry collection published, I thanked Zane. I don't know where Zane is. He is a mystery to me.
No, but you thanked him because he was influential in your moment.
Yeah, Harold Maud telling me to keep writing in the Violent Femmes. That deserves thanks.
Well, Zane, if you're out there listening to Cows FM right now, or to whatever wherever this recording travels in the digital landscape in the future, we appreciate you. That's like a
thank you, man.
Well, let's listen to part of that song. And for those that were there, try to just think back to the angsty when you were angry, but you wanted it to be a little fun too. Femmes. Those lyrics.
So good.
Can you say them again? What were they?
Yeah, I was with a girl, but I felt like I was with a boy. Just, that like blew my mind. Nobody was talking like that.
Yeah, totally.
They were very ahead of their time. And also reflecting something that I think many of us felt at the time
and had been
forever.
Yeah, I mean, in my high school, it was definitely, there was nobody that was out. There was like one person that people knew was gay. I actually went through a whole year of my freshman year where people called me fag and fag boy. And I was just terrified. I was just like, no, like I just, I was like, please stop. Don't call. I didn't know what it meant, but I didn't want to be made fun of. And it was a very homophobic time, at least in my high school in New Jersey. But what a cool, I don't think I remember that song. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, glad to share it.
Wow. Well, yeah, share about this other song that you chose, because I listened to part of it. What a cool mood is the word I used.
Yeah, so the second song is Down by the Water by PJ Harvey. which the song on its own is everything to me, that she could take up space with her voice, going from the deep trenches of strange darkness to these really high places. You know, she just has this incredible range. But also the way that she looked, like she was really bucking beauty standard norms and coming out being sexy and appealing and totally 100% compelling to me. I just really fell for her. And her lyrics were, you know, as a young woman growing up who was thinking about pregnancy, not pregnancy, love, not love, like all of her stuff that she was writing about was just like hitting home for me. It was really great. But I also think of her as someone who opened up the floodgates to, you know, like Tom Waits, Mark Lanegan, Nick Cave, who she used to be in a partnership with, Leonard Cohen, Isabel Campbell, all of these people who have stayed with me since PJ Harvey. I think I got into them because PJ Harvey led me in that direction. So she's pretty influential.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny how that it happens with that. With we're like, one artist will bring you into other artists. And remind me, are you in the same similar moment to the last song? Like, are you kind of, is it like still high school or late high school that you're?
Well, you know, it's funny. So I thought that I was listening to her in high school, that song. In my mind, that's the song that was getting me through high school. But when I went back and I looked at that album came out in 1995, which is the year that I graduated. So I was probably listening to it then, but I had kind of superimposed it beforehand, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's that whole memory thing, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, I mean, I'm sure there's so many things like that. There's things in my family where I was convinced it was true, and then it turns out it wasn't true. It was like, you know, but like they say with memory, it's like, it's the more times you talk about a story or you remember something, you're not remembering the original thing. You're remembering your memory of it. So it's like, you know, you probably in your narrativization of your own life, like that's one chapter that, you know, she's associated with that high school. And then so it becomes true.
It becomes true. And I think that that was one of the things that I was really thinking about as I was going through these songs and places, because one of the things that we talked about when we connected about this originally was that I'm not someone who really listens to music with a bunch of people. Like, I'm not drawn to going to shows anymore. I mean, I did when I was younger, but like, I don't even know that I enjoyed it. I think I just did it because it was what everyone was doing. Music for me is a very solo experience. And when I am experiencing it, I am being brought through memories that are mostly visual memories of experiences.
Oh, yeah. Say more about that. Say more about how you, because I think you said something about that. I'd love to hear, have the audience hear about it. Like how you process memory is less, it's just like more visual is what you told
me. Yeah, it's more visual. It's less, it used to be more verbal. I was really good at remembering everything everyone said in a conversation, or at least I thought I was, you know, who knows. But now, you know, I'm 47, looking back through the span of all my memories, they are landscapes, they are rooms, they are maybe a lemon on a counter. I see things. And those specific memories, even something like this memory of this lemon that I've had since I was 12, it represents an emotional range and a specific time of my life. And so I see things visually and I experience things visually that way. And I think that music is just one avenue for reaching those visuals. But like you said, you know, like when I'm driving, for instance, like the Tamales Bay Marshall Road, every pullout there has a memory for me. But now, because I've been driving that road so much and I've seen those memories so much, I have memories of me seeing those memories.
Interesting.
And so it, in some ways, it's getting further and further away from the original experience. And it's just me looking back almost like a kaleidoscope. Of selves.
That's cool. Yeah, that somehow that what's coming up for me is I have noticed as well the like connection to place, where like you don't remember something, it's not in your brain, and then when you go to a place, it's there. You know, like it's like I think we think of ourselves as like the brain is who we are, and like our memories are all in our brains. But I know in a lot of culture, a lot of indigenous cultures and stuff, it's like the kind of I versus the we is like not as stable. And I sometimes think that maybe like our actual memories are actually existing in the place. And when you show up there, you know, it connects to your experience and you remember it. But I think that's cool that you have, that you've been, I mean, because you, yeah, you grew up in this area. I mean, you know, a lot of your...
I didn't. I also grew up in Los Angeles. I also grew up in Montana.
That's right.
For a little bit in Italy. So I've moved around a lot, but in all of those places, it's still the land-based, almost like a synesthesia, where it kind of like lights up all of my receptors for that experience when I think about what it looks like.
Yeah. So before we play this song, like, what's the visual that we should try to imagine? Like, what's the visual that's in your mind when you think about this song?
Down by the water. Down by the water is very much me in the dark as a 16-year-old girl. And I know that I hadn't heard it when I was 16, but I'm telling you, that's what was happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the reality of my new situation, I'm telling you.
I love it.
But yeah, it was great sorrow and looking for connection and calling someone back to see what was true.
Hmm. All right. Well, that resonates for what we're all going through right now. So let's just try to channel that as we listen to Down by the Water, PJ Harvey.
I lost my heart under the bridge to that little girl. So much to me, and now I moan, and now I holler. She'll never know just what I found. Blue-eyed girl, she said no more. And that blue-eyed girl became blue-eyed whore. Down by the water, I took her hand, just like my daughter.
Down by the Water, PJ Harvey. Yep, the visuals came to me. I think dark room, either alone or all the darkness that we feel right now. I think a lot of people are feeling like there's a lot going on right now. But well, if you're just joining us, I'm Colin Mutchler. This is Remembering Ourselves, where we look back at the music and culture of our past in order to ground ourselves as we navigate this current moment that we're all going through as individuals and communities and society. Lots in transition, a lot of crises going on. So this show is trying to, you know, at least in West County and in Sonoma County, where we're currently based, to deepen connection with each other and with the natural world around us. I'm here today with writer Kelly Gray, who lives in Camp Meeker and is a writer. And hopefully we'll talk about some of the, there's some a new book coming out, I believe. There's some exciting stuff coming out this summer. I know there's, tell us kind of your journey. Like, how'd you arrive in Camp Meeker?
Yeah, that is a good question. It's one that I think about a lot, because to me, it feels remarkable that it even happened. So when I was a teenager, I would come up to Occidental and the Bohemian Highway with my boyfriend who lived in Coleman Valley Road at the time. And so I had seen this area and thought it was really beautiful and had kind of tagged it in my mind as a place where I would end up one day.
No way.
And before, in the year before I actually came to Camp Meeker, I was living in the city. I was a union organizer. I was transitioning out of doing union organizing into full spectrum birth and abortion work. And I was transitioning out of being a married person into being a divorced person. And so two things became apparent really quickly. One, and I had my 3-year-old daughter. And I was really excited to build this new life with her. And I quickly realized I was not going to be able to afford to live in the city at that time as a single parent. And this could have been, you know, a crippling moment for me. But I think what I really saw was an opportunity to get back to what I really wanted to do and be the person that I wanted to be. And so I took out my 401k and I found a little cabin for rent in Camp Meeker. And I lived for the first year off of my 401k, which seemed sensible to me at the time, and got my daughter enrolled in a nature school, which was the first community that I had. I really, you know, I knew a few people in the area that I'd gone to high school with, but not people that I had necessarily been close with or going to call up to be like, hey, I'm here. You know, I was just really living in the woods by myself
with your
daughter.
Yeah.
And when my daughter went to her father's for the weekend, I would sit around and cry and grieve. What have I done? What I went down all these different paths and got really far from who I was and really felt held by the forest in those moments.
Wow, that's really cool.
And felt like, oh, I can get back to who I want to be. And it's just a matter of doing it. And it wasn't like a new me. It was like actually like the true
me returning.
That was already there. Yeah, from when I was like a kid. How did I want to be in the world?
That's I'm like getting a little bit of tingles. There's some resonance for me too. I have my own version of that, but I think when we moved out here, there was some like feeling of connection and reminder of, I think from when I was younger, I think I spent more time in, you know, the woods and in, you know, closer to nature when I went camping a lot when I was a kid. And then all of my adult life was in big cities. And I like cities for what they are, you know, good, you know, great for, you know, energy and culture and diversity and especially when I was in my 20s and 30s, but also similar, you know, when I had kids and I was like just feeling like a little bit more like not as rooted as I wanted to be. And then coming out to West County and just like for me, it was aligned with the pandemic. And it was like that was obviously its own, you know, the early pandemic was at its own moment. But that resonates for me too about just like feeling like, oh yeah, that's right. I know I really well. And plus the society is so out of sync with how I think things should be that you almost feel like dragged into it a little bit, or at least I did. Is like you're kind of like you're forced to just be the way society is, because that's like how to survive in society is you have to go along with those insane rhythms and pressures, etc. But then when you're just like, there's nothing I have to do except for feed myself and, you know, and be here, then you like can actually remember who you are a little bit.
You can start to hear it. Again, you know, there's all this noise that's keeping it out. I think that internal critic that's like, you can't live in the woods or you can't do this or, you know, you can't quit your job that pays you really well to go do nothing. You know, like, that's ridiculous. And it was ridiculous. And a lot of my friends were like, that's absurd. What are you doing? You're endangering yourself and your family. This does not make sense. And I felt strongly enough about it that I made it work. You know, and I was privileged enough to be able to have that 401k to make it work.
I don't think
I would have managed it otherwise. But I did all sorts of jobs. I took jobs house cleaning and walking people's dogs. You know, I was really like piecing it together until I got a job within, you know, I'm a birth educator and a doula. And so I was taken into that world in Sonoma County and have been able to make a really good, you know, place for myself there.
So you eventually found the overlapping communities where it was like,
I found the places that I wanted to be and what I wanted to do. And I've been teaching this childbirth class for the last 12 years since, you know, I got here, and I feel really fortunate for that it's successful. But yeah, there was, I think that it was such a pivotal moment to come up here for me because there were so many things in my life that weren't working and I just wanted them to work. And for me, being somewhere that's a little outside of the main path is where I find refuge and find quiet. And
thanks for sharing that. I wonder how much that resonates with a lot of people that live out here. I feel like, you know, I don't know that many people because I'm relatively new, you know, coming in like 2017-ish. But I do feel like my kind of stereotyping of the broader area of the West County is like, you know, there are a lot of people that either are kind of like us that like maybe were in cities, but then just had their moment of wanting to leave, or people that generally don't want to be around a lot of people and just like want space to be by themselves or having a little more independence. Like, and that's, my guess is that's might be true in rural places everywhere, that like, just like the spaciousness of being away from lots of people is something that's appealing about more rural life. I, like I said, I've never lived in full rural except when I was super young until now. But it is, you know, there's the other side of it. I personally like people. So I'm like also like, you know, sometimes a little lonely and I wish there was more people around that were just, I could, you know, without trying, just like bump into more people. But,
sure.
But yeah, maybe do you mind if I ask about that part of your work? Cause I feel like you are, you know, I remember when we talked in the fall and you were like, you know, we'll kind of, I'll talk to you in the spring. It's sort of like a hibernation vibe a little bit, in the winter, which I think is legit, like in this area. Like there's a lot of people, I saw somebody this weekend. I was like, how's it going? I haven't seen you since, when the rain started. And they're like, yep, sounds right. But you're also, I feel like you, when I observe you out in the world, you're also like a really great community builder, from what I've observed with the Books in the Barns thing and just, you know, in your own unique, cool way, bring people together. And so I'm curious, like, you know, how do you navigate that? Or what's been your journey in West County? Is that new? Have you been doing that the whole time you've been here?
So I think that I've always had the tendency to want to facilitate experiences for people that maybe, I would say, let me back up. As a union organizer and as someone who attended births, I've been to around 100 births. And then I worked with raptors at the Bird Rescue Center. And sometimes people would say, like, well, what, those things seem very different to me. And all of those experiences at some point have a level of deep discomfort in it. And I really like being with people in moments of deep discomfort because I think that there's something that we can get out of it. And so that is, has mostly been something that I do as an organizer. I think about how can we get more experiences where we can feel discomfort. The last few years, I feel like that has shifted for me, although I am still deeply invested in exploring how discomfort serves us. I also just want a place where people can feel good and can feel held, because I feel like that's just obviously missing in our world. Sometimes it's really challenging for me, though, because I don't always want to be around a lot of people, or I don't always want to work with a lot of people on one project. So I do tend to take things on that I'm like, oh, I can do this with one other person, or I can do this by myself. And that will be easier for me to regulate my system and feel like I'm connected in the way that I want to be connected to the project. And I think in recent years that feeling of, oh, we need to be in community to do everything is increasing. And I think that's appropriate that feeling is increasing, because I think that is what's going to get us, maybe not out of, but through what's happening worldwide right now, is building community. But I feel like the idea of community being lots of people does not always sit well with me. And so I kind of think of myself as like the witch in the woods, and I can kind of come into community and leave community when I need to, but I can kind of do something when it needs to be done and then kind of pull back. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, I think that does. I like
one of the ways that I think
about it. Yeah, I think I two things come to mind. One is, or two things kind of occur to me as you're sharing. One is just like that, I think there's an obsession with scale in our current culture, as if like more is better always, that like community is big, you know, if you do, and it fits in with the whole weirdness of social media and, you know, getting more followers and engagement and all that stuff, like that, whatever that rat race is. it's understandable, you know, if you want to reach a lot of people, I can get why it makes sense. But I think it sounds like, you know, where you're coming from is a deeper place. And you, it's not about like community for the sake of community. Like the other point I wanted to bring up was the discomfort thing. And I know you said you're like evolving slightly to make sure people feel held. But in my own work that I've done with some other teachers that also try to create moments of discomfort, I think the language that they use, it's this friend Mia Kota, is like disorientation for reorientation. Mm. It's sort of like the richness of the moments come when there is discomfort and when there is like people are don't know what to do. That's when suddenly everything's alive and people are paying full attention, and there's like, and that's when there's vulnerability is possible too. If everybody's just like hanging out comfortable in the way they're always comfortable, it's not as real, you know, or it's not as, it's like there's less connection built necessarily, you know, sometimes. Or if you're just like having a monster party with thousands of people, it's fun. But I think it sounds like from what I'm hearing and what you're sharing, that the kind of community that you're trying to cultivate, you know, is not mass, but it's deep.
Yeah. And I should clarify. So I've never felt like I had to manufacture discomfort for anyone to have an experience, because I have found that there's enough discomfort in our daily lives that we just access those points. You know, when I was doing union work, which ultimately was not my calling, but I really loved it when I was doing it, my job was ultimately to find where are people most uncomfortable and how do we get them to talk about that. Mm. Right. And then doing birth work, the discomfort is giving birth. And so my job was sitting with people while they're in that place of discomfort and letting them know that it's not going to kill them, even though it actually feels like death, and that our language around it is really confusing because it feels like death, but we promise you, you're giving birth.
Wow.
Right. And so, When I say I want people to feel like they're held, I guess what I'm saying is I'm not necessarily going to these great moments of discomfort right now to do the work. Mm. I just want to have, you know, like Books and Barnes, for instance, is a reading series that is about people, the readers and also the participants, and having a collective experience together where we just transcend like a little bit just for a moment to feel like we're all here experiencing a place. Yes, it's about the reading. Yes, it's about who comes, but mostly it's about the experience.
Beautiful. Well said. If you're just joining, this is Remembering Ourselves. I'm your host, Colin Mutchler. I'm here with Kelly Gray. Let's talk about the last two songs that you chose.
Okay. One of them is really hard for me. I'll do.
You don't need to talk about it. Do you want me to just play them first?
No. Let's talk about it. Okay. So, These are songs that are pandemic onward, right?
Yeah.
Like the moment of now.
Yeah.
So I just instantly went to the pandemic and I was like, what was happening during the pandemic for me musically?
Mm-hmm.
Because I realized I haven't been listening to those songs as much. So one of them is My Body's a Zombie for You. And we can play that song and then we can talk about who it is afterwards.
All right. This is, you just said it. My Body's a Zombie for You. Dead Man's Bones.
Oh,
That was My Body's a Zombie for You by Dead Man's Bones. So yeah, who is yeah, say more about it.
I love this album. I especially love that song. I think it is so romantic. I guess it was romantic to me. I found it during the pandemic, you know, this whole idea of being dead, alive, zombie. And I don't even like zombies. I don't watch zombie flicks or anything like that. But I love this song. It's Ryan Gosling. That's who's singing that song.
No way. And Ryan Gosling?
Yeah. And I also love Ryan Gosling. So when I discovered that, I was elated. I couldn't believe that I was listening to a Ryan Gosling song. And so I started researching it, which is very unlike me to research the music I'm listening to. And I read this article, which I couldn't find before this conversation. So I might be making this up in my mind, but I thought that I read that he met the other guy who he made the album with well in line for the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland.
Wow.
And the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland is actually my favorite place in the world.
Really?
I dream about it about once a month. I think about it often. I'm not, like, I don't love Disney culture. I do love Disneyland. And so to hear that he had this creative moment while standing in line for the Haunted Mansion and then came up with a song that I'd been listening to for some time before realizing it was him.
Wow, what a trip.
I think it means that we have a connection. But
oh, you definitely do. It's there.
Thank you.
It makes me want to go to Disneyland more because I have not brought my children there and I'm genuinely terrified about the idea of going.
You should be. I think that's an appropriate
response. But this makes me more intrigued.
Do you want to have a good time there?
I think it's almost impossible for me to have a good time there unless I talk to some people that know people who are like, they're in the high end.
Yes.
They're like, they pay all the money and they do like a high end experience. And they're like, that's worth doing.
Yeah.
So I don't have a lot of money, but I might be willing to like, just like save up and do that if it's going to make me actually have an okay time.
I would just say like, maybe go without your children.
Oh, that's a better idea.
Yeah. They don't need to be exposed to
that. Two different trips?
Yeah, two different trips.
Bring them later. Oh my God, I love it. But yeah, maybe before we jump into the last song, like is there anything else that you want to make sure we talk about, you know, kind of at the tail end of this conversation? I've really appreciated talking to you. It's been so nice to, you know, hear your perspective, your relationship to music and to the land and places of this county. Is there anything else you want to make sure we talk about?
I mean, no, I'm just so happy to be here. If there's something you want to talk about, I'm happy to keep going. I can't believe that we're close to the end of the show.
I
was terrified before doing this and that just flew by in a really great way. So thank you.
Of course. No, it's a strange thing. How time does move in these conversations. You have conversations just when you're sitting around with people or over on the phone, when it feels like it can stretch and it just can last forever, however long it needs to. But when there's an actual timer going on and you're like, you have to stop at a certain time, it does go differently. Well, maybe let's tell me about this last song.
Yeah, so this last song is by John Prine. It's called Summer's End. And I knew John Prine growing up, but I never really listened to John Prine. And I don't know how I found this song during the pandemic, but it is a song about memory and returning home. And I've never been able to listen to this song without having a full-on cry, a really good cathartic cry. Mm. And that's how I used it during the pandemic. And there was something, for the first part of the pandemic, it was just me and my daughter, and I hadn't met my now partner by that point. And I had this longing for this feeling of home that was not available to me during the pandemic, even though I had my daughter, my favorite person in the world, and this lovely cabin to be in. There was something else missing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the meaning of the song has grown over time.
Mm-hmm, that's cool. Yeah, the thing that you just said that I realized I did want to ask you before we play the song was, you know, that about memory and returning to home. I know the other thing that you and I share locally is a slight connection to the Russian River Historical Society.
Yeah.
And I do think like the memory that is the social memory that is, you know, what we call history of just the deeper story of our place and our times is like such a complicated thing. I do feel like in our broader like national context, it's just like so contested and such a we're in like a many generation long journey around our relationship to our own history. This is the first place I've ever lived where I feel more engaged in the active conversation that is alive right now about the history of this place. And I think it's the similar stories, I feel like, to where you see it more broadly around North America, where it's like, you know, in general, there's the, that we tell the history of the settlers, you know, and it kind of like this, the story starts whenever the Europeans, or the Americans showed up. And then you have the people that are indigenous to that place that, you know, sometimes are around too. And you can, when you start to engage them, they're like, yeah, that was like 10 minutes ago. Like the actual, you know, the actual stories are so much longer and so much deeper, you know, since the beginning, basically like 10,000 years or so. But I'm curious, like, you know, anything, what's your journey around your connection to home and the idea of home and this land? Because I feel like because you, you know, were connection to, you know, what in West Marin was one of your early homes, and now you're in Camp Meeker, like you have a longer time on the, in this lands than I do.
I think that although I do have the, you know, I feel connection to this land, I've had to move so much over my life. Not always because I wanted to, particularly when I was growing up, I moved on average every year and a half. And so now as an adult, what I tell myself when I'm trying to calm myself over everything that's happening is that home is maybe interchangeable with community, and that if I have five people that I can call and connect with and can be myself with and be messy with and let them see all the parts of me, then I have a sense of home.
It's beautiful. All right. Well, Kelly Gray, it's been a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being a guest on Remembering Ourselves. And let's have a great season together. So let's think, as you think about returning to home, what Kelly just said, here is John Prine, Summer's End.
Summer's ends around the bend, just flying. The swimming suits are on the line, just drying. I'll meet you there for our conversation. I hope I didn't ruin your whole vacation. Well, you never know how far from home you're feeling until you've watched the shadows cross the ceiling. Well, I don't know, but I can see it snowing. In your car, the windows are wide open. Just come on home. Come on home. You don't have to.
Again, I'm your host, Colin Mutchler. I'll be here every 2 weeks, pretty much.
Just
first
come
and
on
third.
Home.
First and third Mondays. You're on.
Valentines break hearts and minds at random. That old Easter egg ain't got a leg to stand on. Well, I can see that you can't win for trying.
Radio KOWS LP in Occidental.